This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
This is Eric Michaels, and once again, you have tuned into the eHealth Radio Network and the Emotional Health, Health Care, and Health News channels. We are also streaming on demand 24/7 on TuneIn Radio and the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. Today, we are speaking with Robin Fiorelli, who has spent her career thinking about loss, death, and grief, from what to say to a friend who is grieving to what a community needs when a public tragedy strikes, her education and experience as director of bereavement and volunteer services at Vitas Healthcare have served her and Vitas and the public as well. Robin sees death and dying from a psychological perspective rather than from a medical point of view. Robin, certainly a pleasure to have you with us today on eHealth Radio.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome, Robin. So for starters, does grief affect our overall health? And specifically, what about our physical health and psychological health does it affect?
Sure. Well, you know, we often think that grief is purely an emotional or physical response to the loss of a loved one. But the reality is that there are several physical and cognitive reactions that are typical and normal in a grief response. And sometimes those physical responses can be even more debilitating to a mourner than an emotional response. So physical grief symptoms, for example, can include things like dizziness, shortness of breath, a tightening in the throat or chest. And we note these specifically usually upon learning about the death or shortly thereafter. During the grief process, the immune system can become weakened, making the body susceptible to infections. Many bereaved complain either that they have difficulty sleeping or sleeping too much, eating not enough or eating too much, things like that. So typical somatic symptoms. Some complain even of extreme restlessness, moving from one activity to another, or even the opposite of sitting and not being able to do anything for long periods of time. Now, these physical changes, they can last a few days, and sometimes, though, it's typical and normal for them to last months after the loss. Now, also, people who have had a significant loss sometimes complain of cognitive disturbances as well, like being confused, irritable, and even paranoid at times. Many report difficulty concentrating, memory gaps are common, and some bereaved even experience what we call auditory or visual hallucinations, of their deceased loved one. And sometimes psychologists state that they suggest that this might be a desire for them to be with their loved one again. Many bereaved have sort of odd and sometimes frightening dreams that involve their loved one. So these things are very, very typical, after a significant loss. Now, the other thing is a lot of research has been done on the effects of grief and mourning on longevity of the surviving spouse or the surviving loved one. And actually, the three highest causes of mortality in those that are grieving are death due to A, suicide, B, cirrhosis of the liver, and three, a cardiovascular event. Now, obviously, if the mourner has a history of depression, alcoholism, or cardiovascular disease before the loss, their risk for one of the associated conditions is a lot higher. There also seems to be gender differences in longevity of the surviving spouse. For example, some studies have shown that during mourning, death is twice as likely amongst men than women. Another study that is really interesting found that in particular caregivers ranging in age from 66 to 96, so individuals that took care of their loved one as they were dying, and who also reported mental or emotional strain from caregiving, were 63% more likely to die within 4 years than persons who were not caregivers. These caregivers, obviously, that were under stress were also likely to experience symptoms of depression. So many deaths of survivors soon after losing a spouse are due to cardiovascular disease. You know, we know that common expression that says, you know, he or she died of a broken heart, and that's where that comes from. Now, in addition, you mentioned psychological health. in addition to increasing mortality, the loss of a spouse also increases the chance of developing a psychological illness. One study found a high rate of depression at 6 months and again 12 months after losing a spouse. So specifically, we know that depression increases mortality associated with death due to a cardiovascular event again. It also is thought that depression may cause this increase in poor health by affecting healthy behaviors, or in turn, the depression may have a direct negative effect on health by, you know, like hormonal or other means. So I think that's pretty much the picture of the effects of psychological and physical health on grief.
Now, Robin, get into what is complicated grief and what risk factors are associated with it.
Yeah, that's a great question. So when we're assessing for grief that may have, you know, that's become more complicated, we first start by looking at, are there any pre-existing risk, what we call risk factors for complicated grief that were there, that were evident prior to the death? So these things include things like a history of psychiatric illness or history of substance abuse, a difficult or challenging relationship with the deceased prior to the loss, concurrent life stressors. So not only did I lose my husband, but I also lost my source of income. We also look at, you know, whether the survivor had serious health issues and whether this loss was a loss of a long-term relationship. Now, we also look in terms of, you know, predicting whether somebody is at risk of complicated grief. We also look at the nature of the death and things like the availability of a support or faith system. We've seen that greatly influences how we respond to significant loss. So complicated grief is basically grief that is extended far beyond might be normal for that person in that situation with, you know, in their culture. So we look at, you know, what would be normal for this person and has it extended beyond. And or we look at a reaction that has just greatly impacted the individual's normal functioning, activities of daily living, being able to, you know, live a normal life. So symptoms of grief that have become more complicated generally include things like intense longing for their lost loved one, intrusive preoccupation with the deceased, and essentially just an inadequate adaptation to the loss. Now, some mourners with complicated grief exhibit signs such as lack of self-care, persistent physical symptoms such as insomnia that lasts longer than we would think, withdrawal from their social system, lack of interest in activities, things like that. Now, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Psychiatric Disorders states that an impairment must last more than 12 months after the loss to be classified as complex bereavement disorder. And we know that about 7% of the population fall into that category. It's important to remember, though, that almost any reaction is normal for a period of time after a significant loss. But if the grief response becomes all-consuming and lasts a long, long time, there may be indication of complicated grief.
Also, what are the indications that grief is moving from its normal course and becoming a problem?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great question. So one study actually found that the greatest predictor of a positive grief outcome included such factors as early coping, being active, having opportunities for self-expression, so being able to talk with another one about their grief feelings, and being competent in daily living, and lastly, having good pre-existing self-esteem. The clinical literature actually contains a vast body of evidence demonstrating, I think as we all know, that there's a strong association between social networks or social support and survival. Social interactions seem to moderate or lessen an individual's reaction to the stress and thereby exert some degree of protection against the ill effects that stress has on one's heart, blood vessels, and mental health. So that's essentially how that mechanism works. Some have theorized that because women tend to have more developed social networks, not always, but they tend to, that this may explain to some degree the difference in longevity between widows and widowers. Now, we also know that not only survival, but many dimensions of health are influenced by social networks. You know, social support has in general been associated with less physical and cognitive decline and a better overall sense of subjective well-being.
Most informative on the topic today, we are speaking with Robin Fiorelli, Senior Director of Bereavement and Volunteers at Vitas Healthcare, the nation's leading provider of end-of-life care, here on eHealth Radio's Emotional Health, Healthcare, and Health News channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Now, Robin, I know that you covered factors that influence positive grief outcomes. Tell us, what are some current theories on how our bodies process grief?
Sure. Well, actually, how we view the grief process has changed significantly over the last 20 years. So we used to view grief as kind of a predictable set of stages, or, you know, William Worden, famous for saying the tasks of mourning that needed to be mastered in order to move from one stage to the next and to adapt to the loss. So, you know, stage one looked something like that was the shock and disbelief stage. Stage two was essentially the emotional confronting the painful reality of the loss phase. And then stage three typically was where we, you know, were adapting to a new life without our loved one. But even though this sort of stage model can be useful in trying to understand the grief process, we more recently have understood grief to be kind of less rigidly defined, more individualized to that person, and also more unpredictable. So recent theories view grief as more of a cyclical process, suggesting kind of a back and forth between rumination of painful emotions on one end, and then shifting attention to social adaptation to the loss. Perhaps this is why, you know, when you speak with people that are grieving, they often refer to their emotional state as that of a roller coaster, so a lot of ups and downs. Several authors also have focused more recently on the ongoing relationship that the mourner has with the bereaved. So, for instance, Robert Niemeyer states there's no discernible endpoint found that would count as, you know, quote, recovery from grief. And he also wrote that dwelling on what, you know, is lost has not been found to be particularly helpful in producing positive psychological benefits. Certainly, you know, a degree of time needs to be spent on that, but he believes that the relationship does not end when someone dies, and that instead the mourner sort of reincorporates the deceased into their lives in new ways, which affirm kind of hope and connection in an ongoing way.
And tell us, what are some tips for coping with grief and keeping our own wellness in mind?
Sure. Well, this is my favorite part of the conversation when we talk about what helps. So, you know, when I'm giving advice to a mourner, I always start first with the recommendation that the most important thing they can do for themselves is to allow themselves to completely grieve in their own way, that there is no one set prescribed way to grieve, and there certainly is not a set amount of time. You know, this sounds very simplistic, but I must, you know, emphasize that validating how we feel and what we need can go a long, long way in a productive, you know, grief response. Now, there's several specific things we can do to help us in our grief process. As mentioned earlier, being with others, being with our social system, spending time with family and friends, especially those that are good listeners and that are wanting to share memories of our loved one with us, can be very helpful. And even if it's just for short periods of time, because sometimes it can be hard to be with others. I always recommend allowing yourself to talk about the death, your feelings of loss and loneliness, and the special things that you miss about your loved one. Now, joining a bereavement support group where you listen to others who can normalize for you what you're going through can also be very helpful. And any local hospice company will have information about groups and resources in your area. Now, mental health therapists and clergy persons can also help us sort of individually one-on-one sort through our various feelings and experiences. Now, of course, eating healthy, drinking lots of fluids, avoiding caffeine and alcohol, getting exercise, and having quality sleep are essential during the grief process. We also recommend, and this is really important, setting bite-sized, manageable goals. These can help a mourner raise their self-esteem because there's an accomplishment there and can raise a sense of coping. So we want to lower our expectations after a significant loss about how much we can do and how soon after the loss we can do them. You know, we also recommend doing any activity you did prior to your loss which brought you satisfaction. And, you know, as we know, there's a plethora of grief books and resources that many mourners find helpful. Now, there's a lot of research lately about the human nature of resiliency, right? That's become kind of a catchword. Well, one way to increase a sense of coping with our loss is to recall in the past, how have I coped with other difficult situations? So remember them and remember the coping strategies that I employed, and then building upon these strengths in the current loss. It also can be helpful to create or continue using rituals designed to help in the work of grief. For example, writing a letter to the deceased, visiting the cemetery, looking through photo albums and reminiscing, lighting a candle on his or her birthday or anniversary as a way to sort of commemorate the loss. So many mourners also find writing and journaling extremely helpful. I think we find that it's through journaling that we can reach thoughts and feelings sometimes that are not accessible by other means. Now, we always suggest that the mourner ask others for help, being very specific about what their needs are. As we know, friends always want to help someone who's grieving because it's hard to see somebody else in pain. So giving them a specific task to do is actually a gift to them. Also, remembering that it's okay to say no to things, and the mourner should never feel that they need to accommodate other people's feelings, you know, or putting on a facade to make them feel okay, that this is really our time to get the grief and support that we need. Now, lastly, some mourners find doing for others helpful. For instance, volunteering or giving to another, it kind of helps us, you know, get away from our troubles momentarily. And I think the last piece of advice I always give is we don't want to compare my experience with that of others or accept any assumptions about how long my grief should last. There's a lot of myths out there about that. And, you know, we need to just validate our own individual experience. It's important to validate and remember the loss. Don't ignore the pain or loss. We've lost a very significant part of ourselves, and we need that time to heal.
Robin, certainly appreciate all this helpful advice in the regards to bereavement and grief. We really do appreciate it, and from your expertise as well. In conclusion, any closing thoughts, advice, or a final tip for the listeners tuning in today?
Yeah, I think, Eric, just that idea that grief is a normal response to the loss of a significant loved one. It's not like, you know, getting the flu or getting sick, you know, something that we just need to quickly get up and get over, that it takes what it takes to mourn the loss and to adjust to a new life without our lost loved one. And it's important to take that time and to go easy on ourselves and to validate what we're going through.
And speaking of Vitas Healthcare, where can listeners get more information accordingly, and how can they be in touch?
Sure. If they go to www.vitas.com, and we actually have several grief articles there as well as grief resources, a bibliography on books to read, etc. So again, www.vitas.com.
Again, Robin, thanks so much for your time and for joining us here today on eHealth Radio. Certainly wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Eric. It was my pleasure.
And the pleasure was certainly ours. We have been speaking with Robin Fiorelli, Senior Director of Bereavement and Volunteers at Vitas Healthcare, the nation's leading provider of end-of-life care. And for more information, simply visit vitas.com. And this has been Eric Michaels, and you've been listening to eHealth Radio and the Emotional Health, Healthcare, and Health News channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. And we do thank you for listening. And until next time, enjoy.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.